I don't want to deprive him of any more time. I wanted to welcome each of you here this evening. I'm not sure what brought each of you out. I know some people may have one reason for coming and another person have a different reason. I thought I'd just share momentarily with you a little bit of why I asked Ron to come and why I had a concern to be here. I work right now with people who are in a homeless situation, and most of them are young mothers with children. And as we look at the rate of teenage pregnancies, we're probably talking about 11 million that are teenagers sexually active at this time, and 1 million are pregnant in a year's scope of time. And I can't say that sex education in the schools is the answer. Research has been able to show that having sex education provided in the public schools really doesn't lower the amount of occurrence of teenage pregnancies. But we still see this happening. There have been statistics to show that when you talk about millions, it seems kind of large, but 4 out of 10 14-year-olds, people that are 14-year-olds today, by the time they reach 20, 4 out of those 10 are going to have be pregnant. They may not carry through with that pregnancy, but they will be pregnant by the time they're age 20. I see them because many times then the woman's only alternative is to draw AFDC money. 60% of all AFDC recipients were teenagers when they initially started having children, and as a result, many of them aren't able to get off the system. And when you start to see homeless women with children, it's a frightening thing because you realize that they aren't going to be able to get off that system. Well, you could having sex education in the public school evidently hasn't been the answer. And a large part of that is because in the public school system, you don't see morals involved with that. You don't see gospel involved with that. And so I may be totally wrong, but I'm thinking, well, what kind of role then could the church have with teenage pregnancy or with sex education? Well, that whole issue is very complicated, and I'm sure that education in the church is not going to supply all the answers, but maybe there can be some involvement that can help with the problem. I guess I'm here as a participant to understand more whether the church can have a role in helping people better understand themselves. That also means their sexuality, and maybe thus not have some of the problems that we do see it encountering now. So I guess I'm here with a questioning mind as well to see what we have to offer the people that are in the community and what the church as a community has to offer. I'd like to open with prayer, and so if we could, then I'll turn it over to Ron. Lord, we thank you for this time together to learn more about how we can better serve those others within our community and our own Christian brothers and sisters, and helping them feel better about themselves as people and know how to handle themselves and the lives that they have now and also in the future, particularly our children and our children's children.
Thank you, Harriet. When Harriet invited me originally, and I guess we've talked maybe 2 or 3 times, Harriet, she asked me to talk about the Concordia Sex Education Series. And this particular series began, I guess, in my mind in February of 1977. I came into office January 1, 1977 as Director of Family Life Education for the Synod. And the first LCMS Sex Education Series, actually the first extensive one, came out in 1967. I graduated from the seminary in 68, so I was introduced to it in my last year in the seminary then. And it was a very successful series, and we sold over 600,000 copies of it. Especially the Roman Catholic market. And so when we decided to, well, originally when I wrote the concept statement in February of 77, we decided to revise the old one. And I actually had rewritten one of the books and possibly two of them. And as we looked at costs, we realized that we were at about 60% of the cost of doing a completely new series. So what we did after about 4 months then of work is to completely scrap the old series and start over. And we brought in consultants. We brought in a parish pastor or two, mothers of kids of various ages, some males, and we had them look at the old series, what they liked about it, what they did not like, and then we listed everything that should be developmentally according to parents included for children of the various ages. And so then I started putting the outlines together, and by the way, then I attended several different sex education workshops and used the best resources available to us at that time, and found out a couple of things. One thing was that developmentally we were right on target with our old series. And another thing was that we should pick up the emphasis in early childhood. And so we separated out the early childhood book and added early childhood and then and a kindergarten kind of book. And we also found that we were on target by aiming at the home. Now another thing that we realized, by the way, is that old objectors never die. Because the letters that were written in 1965 against the early planning of the 67 series were the same letters that I started getting in 1977 and 78. Exact same wording. Same objections. And calling us part of the Planned Parenthood conspiracy, etc. Let me tell you that Planned Parenthood does not think that we are partners, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and Planned Parenthood are not partners. We have different kinds of philosophies. Well, we worked on the new Concordia Sex Education Series, and that was what we named it. The old name, Concordia Sex Education Series, was very successful. So we called this one the new Concordia Sex Education Series. Very original, right? We worked on the new Concordia Sex Education Series for 5.5 years. 5.5 years. And every single book and every single chapter was weighed against first article, second article, third article. Sin and Grace, Law and Gospel. And it's there. It's all there. We also said that. Well, when I wrote the first concept statement, I said we're going to have problems with sexism and such concerns as masturbation. The sexism problem was relatively easy to solve. The masturbation question was with us until we went right to the printer. We were still changing galleys. And let me tell you that some of the people had acted as consultants for us. What was their big concern? Their children masturbating. Now, what we said as we began developing the series is that we had to be scripturally correct. We had to be ethically correct. And understand me properly, we had to be politically expedient. Now, what does politically expedient mean? If you are aiming a sex education series at the home, who's going to buy the books? Parents. What does the average parent think about sex? Not how often, but what? The average parent thinks that sex is dirty. The average parent does not see sex as a gift of God. Because we live in a society which perverts. We pervert anyway because of our sinfulness. But we live in a society which perverts and which emphasizes genitals. We live in a society where it's very difficult to express normal affection to one another. So it's hard to express affection to each other as male and female. It's hard for us to express affection to our children. It's hard for us to express affection male, male, female, female. And that's because of sin. So that which is normal then becomes perverted and even becomes dirty. So when we talk about being politically expedient, we want a material that would not make the parents too uncomfortable. Does that make any sense to you at all? So you will find, especially in the high school book, we cover some topics that that are of interest, transvestites, etc. And maybe you have never talked to a transvestite. I got a call from one 2 weeks ago. I mean, just a classical transvestite. I was so excited to talk to him. I'm not kidding about that, because he's a textbook case. But you probably will never talk to one in your life. But we put that kind of information in the high school book because they're interested in those topics. And there's some other things that we did not deal with, like oral sex, which is an issue. Well, why did we not deal with it? Because parents, the average parent, is not capable of dealing with it. Now, it sounds like I'm talking down to parents, okay? I'm trying to be realistic about what you are going to face in your congregation, etc. You heard Harriet talking about the public school and the failures. When I went into this project, I reviewed a National Education Association brochure tract on sex education. It said the public school is the ideal place for sex education because they can present it values-free. Nonsense. The home is the ideal place for sex education because you can present it in a values context. Where is the next best place then? The church. And then the next best place is the Christian day school because of the values context. So, we want to be, again, scripturally correct, ethical, and politically expedient, so that the material would get into the hands of the parents and then into the hands of the children. Now, what we did is we prepared a series then for 3 to 5 year olds, is the first book, 6 to 8 year olds, 8 to 11, 11 to 14, 14 to 18, and adult. Drives teachers nuts, because they would like it to be graded material. We did not prepare it for the schools. What we did, though, is originally the film strips, the old series did have some film strips, but now this one we had a film strip for every age group. And that is intended to be used in the church or school setting. And much like we're doing here tonight, by the way, as you introduce it to parents. Now, I happen to have particular presuppositions, and you may not work with those presuppositions. I, for instance, do not believe that you should separate males and females when you're doing sex education. But the average teacher will say that he or she wants to separate, and that's because of the average teacher's feelings about doing sex education. As far as qualifications for doing sex education, I say if your ears turn red, you probably should get somebody else to do it, because the kids suspect that there's something wrong. One of our authors thought she was really enlightened and had done such a wonderful job with her kids, and now her kids were adults, and now she's writing a book on sex education. And when her daughter found out, she said, "Mom, you remember when I was about 14, I asked you a question about sex?" And you got so embarrassed about it, I never asked you another question. Well, what she had thought was she had done such a good job that she answered all the questions, you see. But her daughter had picked up the embarrassment. Okay? So, what I want to do is to show you a little example of some of the things that we're fighting. And it comes from a 1982 CBS broadcast, their religious programming. And the way this program came about, a communication department in the Synod found out that CBS was doing a program on sex education and said that, told the producer that our material should just be about available, and called me from New York on a Tuesday and said they wanted to film on Thursday and they wanted a class. No, excuse me, they wanted to film the next Tuesday, but they wanted the material there in New York by Thursday. Now, this is Tuesday in the morning. I shipped off the material on Thursday, and I got there on Thursday. Thursday they called me up and said, could you set up a class? And so I arranged with Village Lutheran in Bronxville to do a third and fourth grade class on that Tuesday and a parents' night on Monday night. And then, so Monday afternoon I was there, we passed out the permission slips, and Tuesday we were filming then. So it all happened very fast. But in this videotape, and I don't have the time to play the whole thing for you, it will be available to you as you get out in the parish if you want an example of some of the things that are out there. On it you have the Unitarian. And much of the material that many of us have been fighting in the public schools is the Unitarian sex education program. You have the Unitarian, you have the Roman Catholic approach, you have ours, and then you have Jewish. And let me tell you that when I saw this tape, not because I had anything to do with it or because I was interviewed on it, but I was very proud. I was very proud to be affiliated with the church that I am, that does stress the gospel. The Catholic one, for instance, their emphasis was you shouldn't do this stuff because the church doesn't want you to. Also, it is very evident that their approach is wait until children are ready to experience before you tell them anything. Okay? That's wrong. Now, you've perhaps all heard about kids being traumatized by sex education. And I'm sure that some kids have been traumatized, but the research indicates that anything that they are not able to deal with, they filter out. If you tell a little child, for instance, about the birth process, the kid will laugh at you. Because 5-6-year-old children are not really interested in the birth process. They're interested in whether they came from Cleveland or Chicago or that kind of thing. So, but if you were to watch that whole tape, you would see the differences. Now, as I said, the first one is Unitarian. I want to give you a sample of that to give you a feel for their approach. By the way, when you talk about sex education, you have to watch words too, because everything has a double meaning. So filter out, because I'm not functioning very well. I just came from a birthday party. One of my granddaughters was one today, or is 1 year old today. So I just rushed over from the birthday party. Oh, we got to turn the sound on too, right?
About halfway through the chorus. About lovemaking, which involves all of the caring and sensitivity that one person should have for another in a sexual relationship. The young people thought it was beautiful. As they were leaving the classroom, and the instructors mentioned to them that parents would be seeing the film the next week, they voiced some concern. Oh, it was a beautiful film, but our parents aren't yet ready for it.
CBS presents 4-Hour Time. Today, religion and sexuality are...
That's Village Lutheran there.
What shall we tell the children? Here is CBS News correspondent Douglas Edwards.
Where did you learn about sex? At home, friends, school, church, synagogue? How much misinformation was supplied? Did adulthood eradicate misconceptions or after involvement with sex? Do you think the answers come readily? We grow up, become adults, enter old age, often innocent of information, fearful of our own feelings. Today's program, What Shall We Tell the Children?, is about the growing involvement of church and synagogue in sex education. Throughout the country, parochial schools, Sunday schools, youth groups in churches and synagogues are exploring a common theme. All persons are sexual beings. Sexuality is a gift of God.
This is our language, by the way.
How does it affect our lives?
He's taking this from us.
Very specific denominational guidelines. Religious groups differ widely in their approach to sexuality. We've sampled 4 denominations whose attitudes and methods are quite diverse. Each person who teaches, each denomination has its own value system. But no matter what your orientation is, there is probably a group to meet your needs. Many religious educators stress the need for sex education for parents as well as children. Adults today often have difficulty understanding their own sexuality, and as a result, are reticent in discussing sex with their children. Nowadays, they look to school or church to do the job.
The Unitarian Society of Ridgewood, New Jersey, sponsors such a program. The curriculum titled About Your Sexuality was founded in the late 60s. Instrumental in its development and use throughout the country is the Reverend Elizabeth Anastas.
We finally published the program in 1971. It includes 10 or 11 units. It involves everything from for leaders as to how to start introductory sessions, how to make the young people feel comfortable in talking about sex, because usually they're very embarrassed and reticent in talking about such a sensitive area, to anatomy, masculinity and femininity, lovemaking, homosexuality, masturbation, opposite sex friendships, same sex friendships, sexually transmitted diseases, conception and birth, and contraception. This program is different from most of the others that I have observed and experienced in that, in its honesty and its frankness. One of the assumptions that underlies this course is that there is no aspect of human sexuality, no question about it that a young person might ask that we will not answer.
Jacob and Gail Brown lead a group of 9th and 10th graders. They stress the non-judgmental aspect of the Unitarian program, which spans a period of up to 40 weeks.
Before we get on to the lesson of the evening, we wanted to answer some questions from the question box last week. Last week, we got a couple of good questions, and I was going to do one, and Gail was going to do one. One of the questions here was, this is kind of a technical one, I guess. Is it true that cum is the only fluid that comes out when you make love? Now, if you remember our terminology session, what's another word for cum? Semen, right? Okay. Now, we weren't, sure what the concern was here, but the answer to that basically is yes. And maybe what the person was interested in knowing was exactly what makes up semen. It has the male sperm from the testes. It has got fluid from the seminal vesicles and other secretions from the Cowper's glands and prostate glands. So all these fluids together, make up the material that's ejaculated during orgasm when the male has sex. Another thing that Gail and I were wondering about this question was whether or not the person was curious to know whether or not any urine could come out during sex. And in fact, when the male has an erection, there is the muscles that allow urine to come down from the bladder are closed off, so urine doesn't come out. It stays in the bladder. I hope that gets to the question. If it doesn't,
ask again,
clarify it and rewrite it, okay?
There were a number of questions which we felt were grouped together. I read them quickly, and then we're going to divide into two groups and do some brainstorming and come back together. If two people want to be with each other, but they're both shy, what should they do? Another question. If you really like someone and they barely know you exist, what do you do? Two different aspects of similar thing. And what's a good way to let someone know that you like them without scaring them off? So I made up a couple copies of the questions and divided them into two groups and do some brainstorming. Remember our rules for brainstorming? Which are no criticism.
Neat, right? You get the drift of it at all? Pretty much, you can do what you want to do. It completely disregards what happens emotionally and in your head. And I've been in Denmark and Sweden, for instance, in the discos, and seen people sitting around with bored looks on their faces because they've done everything and they've experienced everything. And they've taken the awe and the wonder out of God's gift. And what you have done here, I think, is you have taken the awe and the wonder out. Now, I don't know if any of you have experienced the adult programs, Varied Enrichment, or any of the others, where on the sexuality part, they start off by getting you to throw out all of your dirty words, any dirty words you've heard in life, and then you write it on newsprint, and then you sit around and laugh about those dirty words. And to me, that's not the greatest approach either, because it takes away from sacredness, the mystery, and the awe surrounding sex. So it is really a travesty. This is the Roman Catholic. See if I can pick any of this up.
The teachings are far more vast than that, and that we go into striving to present to our children the moral teachings, the doctrinal teachings, the history, the scriptural teachings, and all the Catholic Church. And human sexuality fits into that because it is a beautiful gift from God that we cherish and that we want to use in full respect to God's gift.
In the sophomore year of high school, we have a program that has been designed basically as an outgrowth of a program begun in Milwaukee, which is Sex, Sexuality, and You. It deals with teaching the specifics of the human body to teenagers, presenting them with the doctrinal teachings of the church and behavioral and psychological aspects of themselves within a Christian perspective of sharing respect for human life. The program, I think, is important for sophomores because by that time their interest is a little deeper, a little more genuine. They're looking for real information.
Four of their students shared their feelings about...
I could let you hear that too, but basically what they're telling them, you don't want to do it because the church tells you not to do it. And you heard her say that we start with sophomores. I think there is good, solid evidence to say you start with parents. You start with parents and get them to realize that the parents are sex educators from the very moment that they first hold that child. And that when both husband and wife, mother and father, hold a baby, that's sex education. And I feel very deeply about that. So when we were putting our series together, we said that the pivotal book is this one, which we titled, it's a very long title, Sexuality, God's Precious Gift to Parents and Children. And we spent one third, at least in manuscript form we did, spent one third of the time talking about the husband-wife relationship before then we go developmentally through the age stages. because I believe you have to get your own sexuality on straight before you can effectively deal with your children or comfortably deal with your children. And I had to learn a lot of things myself about myself when I became a sex educator. And, well, I started out as a family life educator and got into sex education. For instance, I had all daughters. And when suddenly then I was confronted with grandsons, I realized that it is different. And when I saw my first naked grandson running around the house, I was a little embarrassed by that. We had had a male dog one time, and he was so embarrassed being around the house, we had to get rid of him. They kept me. But so constantly learning about myself and where I was, being comfortable with my own sexuality, etc. Is there anything you want to ask or anything you want to say up to this point? Before I actually run out of time without getting the sex ed series. How many of you are familiar with the series already? Oh, everybody. Okay, let me show you just a little bit about ours that we did at Village Lutheran Church.
Is meeting with the Reverend David Tobin, principal of the school. He teaches the sex education course. As in many denominational sex curricula, the parents are informed about the nature of the materials and are invited to screen the visuals before they're viewed by the children.
What are we going to talk about today? What was the answer I got from at least somebody? You forgot already?
Sexuality?
Well, that's the answer I gave you back. That's kind of neat. Because somebody said sex. And I said, yes. That's part of it. We're going to be talking about a bigger word. We're going to be talking about sexuality. When you talk about sexuality, you're talking about a miracle. Because each one of us is a miracle. And you're talking about...
You hear the difference in the approach?
The same kind of love that God had when he sent his son Jesus to die on the cross to save us. The same kind of love that happened when a miracle occurred and each one of us was born. We're going to be looking at a film strip today. It's called How You Got to Be You. And it's got some pretty nice things in there about growing up as growing men and women, about that word sexuality, how neat it is to be a whole person who can feel and touch and love and be part of what God has given to us. And above all, it answers some questions too.
You are special. And God loves you just as you are. He created you to be.
But I want to be sure, just like we said to your mom and dad, chapel school isn't the place to get all of the answers.
By the way, that's Jason there. I'll tell you about Jason in a minute.
Nothing new that came up in there that might have something you'd like to comment on before. Yes, Piper?
You know, just like the words.
Yes.
The different kind of words that just came up.
So maybe a chance to really be sure we understand some of the words would be good. One of the things we're hoping to do is to have families be sure that they start using the right words at the very youngest age. That book I showed you before, that each one specially begins using the word penis, vagina, with the little three-year-old so that he or she can begin to understand that not only has God created them as an individual, but kind of neat, kind of special, but there are right names to call things. Why use the silly ones when you can learn the right ones? So if you ask a question, it may help somebody else who doesn't have a question or has one that they don't think that they can answer. Dave, you got one?
Yeah, what causes the body to react the way it does during intercourse surgery?
What causes it to react?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, part of it has got to be emotional, and part of it has got to be a muscle reaction that takes place, too. I'm not enough of a biologist, Jason, to really tell you what makes it happen that way, but the man's muscle has got to react to force the sperm to come, and obviously, the sperm itself is a living creature, so once it enters into the female, then it obviously can swim until it reaches that age. Anything else? I know you're not all tongue-tied, so why don't you go ahead and ask us? Laurie?
Does it depend on how many sperms the mother's egg has for how many babies?
Does it depend on how many sperms?
Yeah.
No, only one sperm is going to unite with one egg, and sometimes intercourse will take place, Laurie, and none of the sperms.
I said, watch Jason. Jason was set up. We're in a big room in the fellowship hall of the school and had parents from all grades there. And Jason's dad was sitting up here. And Jason's dad was really very uncomfortable. And as I made my presentation, he fidgeted and then he settled down. And as he was leaving, he said to Dave Tobin, the principal, he said, I'm into AV, and if there's anything that I can do for you around the school, let me know. Now, as a matter of fact, he's a high muckety-muck in CBS News. And he went home and he coached Jason. I was standing in the back, and the director was saying to me, he's set up. I said, he couldn't have been. The parents left here at like 9:30 last night. She said, when the parents got home, Jason's dad called me. And so he had briefed Jason. Jason asks another question, too, that got into the tape miraculously as CBS edited it. But the kids, it was very interesting because these kids, fifth and sixth graders, were interested in the more esoterical kinds of things, the uniting of the sperm and the egg, and some of the other things about the birth. They were not interested in intercourse. Okay, they did not ask those kinds of questions. So I think they were pretty typical, even though in some ways they were advanced kids, but they were pretty typical. So it was sort of funny to be sitting or standing in the back as we're shooting and to watch the reactions and then to hear Jason ask his questions. Okay, any comments now? I could show you the Jewish one, but let me just tell you that in the Jewish one they just fish around and say, the rabbi says, does anybody have any idea what the Jewish teachings are on sex? And then they have a debriefing setting where several of their instructors come together, and one of the female instructors says, my biggest problem is separating between what I believe and what the church teaches. Well, if you've got that kind of dichotomy, why are you teaching it? And why are you teaching it in a religious setting? But that's what I say. I'm really pleased at the kind of approach that we have taken. Now, let me tell you how you're going to hook in to sell sex education. That's what's happening in the society. No, excuse me, what is happening in the society? You can use the negative to get to the positive. And what they will want you to do is to save the teenagers, especially the teenage girls, of course. You're not going to be terribly successful there. You may be successful with some of them. But where you can be successful is down the road, as you make a difference with young parents, young couples marrying, and as they raise their children to feel good about who they are as male and female. That's when you're going to be successful. But that is a long kind of haul. And you will constantly be hearing about people misusing the material. Back in the 30s, it was gonorrhea and syphilis, etc. When I came into the Navy in the 1950s, we were afraid of gonorrhea, and then we developed a new penicillin-resistant strain and those kinds of things. And now it's AIDS. And if you go to San Francisco and you walk up and down Polk, well, that neighborhood has changed. And part of it is the Chinese pushing the gay community out, but part of it is the AIDS scare. So what we are living in is a time that is really ripe for good, solid sex education. And we're even hearing Planned Parenthood now advocating chastity. That's a change that has taken place in just the last few months. In the last 2 weeks, I have had several calls from Associated Press, newspapers, etc., wanting to talk to me about our sex education series and what the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod teaches on sex education and human sexuality. So So people are listening. And by the way, if you get into a school district where they're having all sorts of problems, like with the universalist curriculum, etc., do not be afraid to get a hold of our stuff and offer it to them. Because there are school districts that are using our stuff. In fact, on both coasts, and some of the places where they have mandated sex education in the schools, they have come to us. And it's not just our religious people, but others, superintendents, etc., have written. I'd like to share with you how I introduced the material. And if you buy it, or if you have it someplace, you will not see it written up this way, because we wrote the introductory stuff as we completed it, but before we had introduced. And the way I start off is with each one specially, which is this book, for the 3 to 5 year old. You are going to find out the attitudes of your parents. Okay? You're going to find out the attitudes of your parents as they see this film strip. I say film strip and I'm putting in a videotape. The reason for it is because, last April, we got together and said, let's do a conversion to videotape. And as we looked at it, we decided we're going to do almost a literal conversion. So we used the same visuals in the videotape as we did in the film strips. So, this is the way I start off with it then. Now, if you have a board, by the way, that's giving you fits about introducing this stuff, I would not hesitate to write for this one. You can write me or communication, but you're probably better off writing me on the 4 different approaches to sex education, because I think it's very graphic, the differences, if you were to see the whole tape. In the back.
Well,
too. And he can do a lot of things. My father is a he, so are my grandpa and my uncle. So is that lion tamer, and that cook, and that teacher, and the man flying that plane. I'm glad I'm a he.
You're a she, and he's a he.
But how did God make us? I don't know. How?
God made you in a special way. Sometimes a grown-up he and a grown-up she love each other very much. So, with God's blessing, they get married. Then they decide that they want a little baby to share their love. God answers their prayer, and a baby grows inside its mother for 9 months. It is safe and warm. Sometimes it wiggles and kicks. When it gets bigger, you can feel it from the outside. After 9 months, the baby is born. The mother and father are very happy to have a new baby. That is how God made you. That is how He makes all people. And God does another great thing. He puts people into families. That's so they can take care of each other and love each other. Some families are big, and some families are small. There are many different kinds of families. What kind of family did God put you into?
I like to play ball with my brother. I like to hug my mom. She's a good hugger. I'm glad God put me into a family. I like to feed my sister and go fishing with my grandpa. I'm glad God put me into a family.
God puts us into a church family, too. People in church families take care of each other and love each other. Some church families are big, and some church families are small. There are many different kinds of church families. Which kind of church family did God put you into? Church families do things together.
I like to make things in Sunday school. I like to learn about Jesus and sing songs. I like to see my friends at church. I like to pray to Jesus. Me too. And I like to look at the windows. They are beautiful. I'm glad God put me into a church family. Me too. I am he. God loves me. I am she. God loves me.
God loves each one specially. That is why He is so good to us. God loves you, too. Aren't you glad He does?
Now I'd allow enough time for discussion. Obviously, we don't have a lot of time here, but... Remember, I said that you would gauge some of the reactions, you would find out where your people were by the reactions to this. For instance, I presented this at a pastoral conference right after we finished it, and some of the pastors really objected to the nude kids. And one of the pastors came out and said, but why the stark naked children? Isn't that a little shocking? And I said, well, it may be shocking to us as adults, but this is what kids are interested in. They're interested in how they're alike, how they're different. Yeah.
Well,
to give that pastor credit, he said to me, oh, you're probably right. And I'm sure that he was accepting what I was saying on it, that he was just not totally rejecting it. Another pastor, a fellow that served on the faculty with me when I was at Prophet Stewart, said, Ron, why all the nudity? And then he gave a little lecture. And all of the other pastors then disagreed with him. And he said, well, you may be right. And the next thing I had from him was a letter saying, you were right. I've used the material through the grades, and it is effective. So helping parents then, getting those reactions out and helping them see that this is where the kids are developmentally. Yes, Harriet. Yes, this one, this book, is a read-to book. The next one already becomes a read-along with, the 6 to 8. So, and same thing with the high school, etc. That I believe that the parents should know then what their children, what is available for their children. Some of the research, a Cincinnati study, for instance, done about the time we were coming out, done in 1981, indicated that by the time the average child is between the age of 9 and 11, all conversations about sex and sexuality have stopped, with the exception of don't do this, don't do that. Just at the time, the 9-year-old child is capable of understanding the concept of intercourse. They're really not capable of understanding intercourse until 9. Now, you've all heard about Freud's latent period, the period of 6 to 9. 6-year-old kids are already simulating intercourse. They are never in a sexually latent period. They are sexually active from birth on, in one way or another. So the parents would like to see that sexually latent period, but it just does not exist. But as far as understanding the concept of sexual intercourse, age 9, that's when we present it. Now, the Sweetie Sex Education series teaches contraception at age 9, because to be sexually responsible means to use contraceptives. Does that sound familiar? Because that's what we're teaching now, right? And what do they say? Chastity will not work. Chastity will not work unless people are taught to value it. And the sexual drive is so powerful. I mentioned being in the discos of Sweden and Denmark. If you look at the story of the rape of Dinah, for instance, of Tamar's rape, you will find that sexual drive is almost overpowering. In the rape of Dinah, what do the brothers say as they kill off the villagers and carry off the women, the children, and the cattle, etc.? They say, what do you expect, that we should allow our sister to be treated as a common whore? Right? And if you look at the difficulties between Absalom and David, they stem back to the rape of his sister. The sexual drive is a tremendously powerful drive. Martin Luther recognized it. He called it the urge to procreate. And Martin Luther offers some weird advice, right? You've all read Luther on it, right? He says to wives, too, if your husband is not able to service you, say to him, get me your brother, or get me your uncle, or get me somebody. Because of that urge to procreate, he calls it. He also talks about what happens to women who never marry. They are sickly, and they wither, and they die, because they have not fulfilled that urge to procreate. Now, is Luther completely wrong? Well, Luther recognizes the power of our sexuality. So it is nothing to be tampered with, it is something to value. Okay. Anything else on this or how I go about introducing Jay?
I'm just wondering about, like, in a congregation, would you just, like, have a Saturday sex education thing for the parents where you just go through video one, video two, video three, or how do you...
Yeah, I go then to the adult one, which overviews.
By the way, did you turn down the buzz on that TV?
I'm going to use it again. Yeah. Is that buzz bothering you? A little irritating, right? But you're long-suffering. It's been on for 5 minutes. Okay, then what I do is, after some discussion, I go to the adult, which is overviewed. By the way, the preschool one follows the book literally. You'll find already in the second one a departure, and then as the book gets more complex, of course, it's very difficult to put it in a short film strip videotape. Are in the high school book. Now, if you're going to show genitals, you should show them as realistically as possible. We used cartoon art so that we wouldn't offend parents. Okay? But you should be as realistic as possible, because if a kid sees that picture and says, I'm not like that, then they get to worry about it. The concerns that the females are concerned about breasts and hips, males are concerned about penis size. We need any sex instruction for our young. All we're going to do is give them ideas.
Somebody better do something. All we read about anymore are sex crimes, people living together without being married, teenage pregnancies, abortions, and on. Things have gotten into a real mess.
I say that the school has no business teaching anything about sex. That belongs in the home. I want my children to have the same values I have.
I suppose that the home is the best place for any sex instruction, but frankly, I couldn't talk with my children about sex. I'd be completely awkward and embarrassed in the whole situation.
These are just a few of the honest opinions parents express as they look on their responsibilities. Responsibilities that go far beyond supplying the everyday needs of their children. Though there can be disagreement as to method, there can be no disagreement as to the value and necessity of proper and accurate sex instruction that is carried on in an atmosphere of love and concern. To be sure, our children are receiving an avalanche of sex instruction, whether we like it or not. Unfortunately, much of the information is distorted, if not completely untrue. The Christian home is the ideal place for sex instruction, since it is an intimate unit of people who share a faith in Jesus Christ. The Christian family realizes that sin is a fact of life, but it also realizes that God, in love, sent a Savior who earned forgiveness for all people of all time through his life, death, and resurrection. The Christian faith is lived out as parents show love and concern for one another and for their children. This example is the very essence of sex instruction, for the attitudes we share are catching. The emphasis on attitudes, however, does not lessen the importance of factual information regarding sex. When sexual matters are discussed with reverence and dignity in an atmosphere of love and concern, we have gone a long way toward creating sound, positive attitudes about one of God's most powerful gifts. As an adult parent, each of us can discuss sexual matters with confidence. We have lived through those years of development from early childhood to adulthood, and we can still vividly remember our own sex education. One part of proper sex education is using the correct terms for the body parts that are involved. When we use the correct terms, it becomes very natural and normal for our children to use them. They don't need to use the slang or off-color words that make sex dirty. We don't need to know or share great volumes of information, but we do need to know the simple, basic facts that our children will ask us about.